and welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host, delighted to be with you today on Monday, May 20th. And I have in the studio with me Jason Ciccola, who is the founder and CEO of Rev.com. Very excited to talk with him about megatrends of remote work, labor marketplaces versus crowdsourcing, and the role of technology in freelance work. But before we get there, this is the Global Product Management Talk. You can find us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. That's our Twitter handle, @PRODMGMTTALK, and our hashtag, if you'd like to tweet and follow us, PRODMGMTTALK. And by the way, it's also our website. You could go over to PRODMGMTTALK.com and give us a donation if you enjoy the podcast. And we won't be broadcasting live next week, so you'll have an opportunity to listen to over 80 archives of past podcasts, which you can find there. We're also on iTunes. We're out on Stitcher. We have an Android app. Any podcast application you're using, just search for PRODMGMTTALK. So what are we doing here? The Global Product Management Talk is a discussion of vital issues affecting professionals passionate about products, business process, product management, startups, marketing, innovation, and excellence. And you are welcome to call in to talk with us today at 323-927-2957. That's the same number weekly when we are live, and our engineer BZ Lewis will be happy to screen your call. We are broadcasting out of Studio132.com in the Oakland Hills, six-time Emmy winner, and we're listening to music from Blame Sally. Thank you to Blame Sally. They're at Blame Sally, www.blamesally.com. I heard them in concert 2 weeks ago in San Francisco. They are excellent. So I am Cindy F. Solomon. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon. And I use my middle initial to distinguish myself from the other Cindy Solomon in the San Francisco Bay Area, who's an expert in customer service. So we are brought to you this week by the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, founded in 1998, promoting worldwide excellence in product management education, providing training, certification credentials, and professional networking opportunities in over 65 countries. They are forwarding the product management profession with the ProdBoc, the product management body of knowledge, and with certifications, Agile Certified Product Manager, Certified Product Manager, Certified Product Marketing Manager, Certified Brand Manager, Certified Innovation Leader. Check them out at www.AIPMM.com and on the web at AIPMM. Sprintly, don't ask how it's going, watch how it's going with Sprint.ly. Sprintly is project management software that brings in the entire corporation to the software development process by showing managers and non-engineers a top-level view of what the programmers are doing. Check them out at Sprint.ly. Follow them on Twitter at Sprintly. And follow Joe Stump, the CEO, at Joe Stump. He writes excellent stuff, and he's on the cutting edge of how to follow your product management projects. Thank you to BrainMates, boosting people and product performance. Subscribe to the newsletter, read popular brain rants, learn about their consulting and mentoring approach to forward your product management career and methods at BrainMates in Australia and BrainMates.com. Excellent content about product management issues. Thank you, Sponsumo, solving the headache of managing conferences and other events, allowing you to focus on relationships and sales. Sign up for a trial account at Sponsumo.com. At Startup Product. Startup Product is a movement for product excellence through cross-discipline collaboration and holistic product perspective. Join meetups in San Francisco, SF Product Talks, and bring Startup Product to your community. Go to meetup.com/startupproduct and check out upcoming events and summits at startupproduct.com. Okay, if you'd like to be mentioned on the broadcast, we are a top 10 business podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Just shoot me an email, Cindy@prodmanagementtalk.com. And let's see, over the weekend, I was at Maker Faire in San Mateo. Check out Maker Faire. Oh, my goodness. It was a total geek fest. Very exciting. I got to talk with Nolan Bushnell, who started Atari and Chuck E. Cheese, and talked to the drivers of the steampunk movement, which I didn't realize is all about technology. And also STEAM stands for science, technology, engineering, art, and math, which I had no idea. So very cool. And also one more thing. Over the weekend, there was yet another product camp. If you go to Storify.com/PRODMGMTTALK, you can read tweets from product-related events and all of the product camps happening worldwide. Okay, so again, this is Cindy F. Solomon. Let me give you a little background. Businesses have a tough time interacting with people who are overseas and in different time zones. There's also the hassle involved with having to select the best workers from a large pool of possible freelancers, leaving business customers unsure of what the final results will be. So our guest today, Jason Ciccola, has a solution for that. Jason is the founder and CEO of Rev.com. Prior to starting Rev, he was a third employee at Odesk. He was also an investment professional with HIG Capital and an associate with GlobeScan Capital Partners. Earlier in his career, he was a business analyst at McKinsey & Company, and he earned BS degrees in electrical engineering and computer science and economics from MIT. Excellent. And so let me just tell you about Rev.com. Rev.com is a services marketplace that works with the top 10% of freelancers and delivers services to businesses at half the price and twice the speed of traditional vendors. Rev's first two services are audio transcription and document translation. Unlike offerings that require businesses to coordinate projects directly with freelancers, Rev.com vets the workers, manages the project, and guarantees quality. Rev.com also develops and supports its iOS app, the Rev Voice Recorder, a free audio recording app with one-click transcription services. Rev's mission is to build the best place for freelancers to work. It's headquartered in San Francisco and is funded by GlobeScan Capital. Check them out at Rev.com and on Twitter at Rev. Jason, welcome.
Cindy, thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here in the studio. I'm a big fan of product management and anybody that furthers that discussion. So happy to join.
Great. So is there anything I left out in the intro that you want to add in?
You know, I think that's a pretty well-rounded starting point. The you know, as you mentioned, we take a different approach, I think, than a lot of folks that look at freelance labor. Many people start with the customer, and we try to start with the worker. So if there's one thing that I think is different, we try to always put ourselves in the shoes of the worker and ask the worker, what would you like? What would make Rev the best place to work? And that's led us to build a different type of platform than the so-called crowdsourcing folks. So I think that's kind of a key difference. We try to treat people like humans, not robots, which means we try to help people stay busy, earn a relatively steady income, have a career path, have a community, have the opportunity to build their skills and grow. And we think that the better we get at building career paths for work-at-home freelancers, the better we're going to be at delivering A-plus service to clients.
So let's step back a little bit, because we're assuming that people know what it is to be a work-at-home online worker. And that may be an unfair assumption outside of San Francisco. And our listeners, shout out to the local community, but our listeners are worldwide. So could you explain what it means? How can someone become an online worker and what's involved in that?
Sure. So let me kind of just take a step back and start with You know, what are the ways you can work? In general, somebody can be, you know, an employee or a contractor. And the kinds of work that I'm talking about are contract positions that people can find on the internet, working from home. So there's two elements here. One is remote. Remote means you're working not in someone's office, but you're working from a computer. That could be from your house, a coffee shop, a personal office. And we're talking not about W-2 employment, but about what you'd call from the tax code a 1099 contractor, people that are contractors, which means they work in a flexible arrangement, which has pros and cons, but it means that it's not guaranteed and it's designed to be flexible. So there are many, many ways someone could try to find work remotely as a contractor. As you mentioned, I was involved early on with a company called Odesk, odesk.com, that's O-D-E-S-K.com. Odesk is, I think it's safe to say now, the largest marketplace for remote labor. And in the early days, the founder and I spoke about it as we were trying to build the eBay of labor. And we think that, I think that the company has effectively achieved that position of becoming a dominant force like eBay is in its space. Odesk is a place where businesses can hire workers to work remotely. And there's feedback scores that the people get to build up their profiles, just like eBay power sellers build feedback scores as well.
So when you say eBay, my immediate association is auction. So you're not building an auction place for people to find workers.
So there are many different sites that have different models. The model at Odesk is basically people get hired for hourly work. And there's a negotiation that goes back and forth between the business and the worker around how much that worker should get paid per hour. Is it going to be $10 or $20 or $30 an hour? And so the element that's like eBay is that there's two sides to it. In fact, eBay is really the kind of granddaddy of all marketplaces. Every entrepreneur in Silicon Valley that has a business with two sides to it looks to eBay as the granddaddy, because eBay, everyone knows, it's a big company, it's worth a lot of money, but most importantly, they've built a very defensible position, because while they have the software, which is nice, more importantly, they have this huge network of users on both sides. There's two sides to it. There's the sellers and the buyers, right? And in the case of a marketplace site, there's the businesses and the workers. And it's very difficult to build a marketplace because you have early on a chicken and egg problem. You know, in the first day, it's really tough because you have nobody. If you have one customer and no workers, or one worker and no customers, not a whole lot's going to happen. So, you know, the eBay analogy is simply because what matters in a network is ultimately not the software. What matters most is, do you have a large network of users on both sides that want to transact and that are coming there for the right reasons? So, you know, in the case of eBay, what matters is, are there people that want to buy and people that want to sell that come every day? And on a labor marketplace, what matters is, are there businesses that have real work they need done, and are there workers that have a lot of work they can do?
Excuse me. So I just want to say that I've been trying to tweet out, and something must be going on in the world. Twitter is overrun, so I can't get any tweets out. So it's a good thing that we'll be able to get an audio transcript afterwards, so people can read what we're talking about, and it's also I get to focus on the discussion. So thank you for explaining the importance of the eBay marketplace, because from the seller or from the purchaser, they're only seeing one side. They're not thinking of it as a full ecosystem. So that's very important to see the big picture, and also to shed light on what you're doing with Rev.com.
Yeah, and so there are many different approaches to remote labor. There are folks that have a horizontal approach, folks that have a vertical approach, folks that are focused on one particular segment. I think you mentioned UI the other day, a company that does usability testing. There are folks that tackle graphic design, like 99designs. And you know, each approach has you know, pros and cons and unique aspects. You know, with Rev, you know, we are focused on as you mentioned, document translation and audio transcription. And what we, as I mentioned, try to do that's different is we really focused in on the worker experience and have built a lot of tools and processes to try to create the richest possible environment for the workers, and which means, like I said, career path and high productivity.
So for me, it's very cool. And by the way, I met Jason through Mark Chen, who comes to the Startup Product Meetups. So shout out to Mark, and thanks for the introduction. My experience was I sent Mark an MP3 of one of our episodes, and in less than a day, he sent back this beautiful text of the episode, a beautiful transcription, which was amazing to me, because I've tried different transcription services. When I started, I would try and do it myself. It would take 4 days, and I wouldn't get it perfectly. It was a real pain. So that kind of blew me away that Rev.com could turn it away, not only so quickly, but so excellently, because it came back all laid out beautifully, like a script.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you have that. I'm glad you had the opportunity to try our service before. We are deeply committed to building, you know, the world's best service, both for transcription and translation. For transcription, our offering, as you mentioned, it's a very simple one. People give us audio files, so people send us podcasts. We have journalists that send us interviews. People that are writing books, that are doing dictation. We have board meetings. We have legal depositions. We have preachers doing sermons, cops sending in interrogations, a huge range of audio files. They send them all to us. They pay $1 a minute. We send back a transcript that's typed out high accuracy by two people, typically with you know, speaker names, and the average turnaround time for files under an hour is less than 24 hours.
So those two people, they're not doing paired transcribing, which is my reference to extreme programming, where two programmers will sit together in front of one screen. And even though it seems like a lot of resources would be involved to have two people focused on one set of code, the stats are that it improves the quality and it actually improves the speed of that code being bug-free.
So you're very right about extreme programming, but I should have clarified when I said two people. What I mean is we have one person that fully transcribes the audio, finishes, submits it, and a second person comes along and grades and proofreads it.
Nice.
So, you
know, it's an editor.
Yeah, we think that's important because you lose context when you break it up into many little pieces. And that's something that we think is a differentiation. If someone was to transcribe this call that we're having, and if you use a particular term at the beginning, middle, and end, you wouldn't want three different people spelling that word three different ways. And that's what can happen when you fragment tasks to a too granular you know, size.
And even more so, if people don't understand what the context is or what the subject matter is that the people are talking about, or if one of the person has an accent, they will totally miss the whole point. And that's been my experience in using other services. Before I knew about Rev.com, is I had to break it up, so it was more time on my part. And then I had to go through and put it back all together, or I had to train someone to understand what the subject matter was, which meant they had to study before they could understand what we were talking about.
Yeah, the reality is that many things that someone thinks are easy are actually a skill where there's a lot of expertise. And
yes,
our transcriptionists do this for a living. You know, they do it 4 to 8 hours a day, and they can type quickly. They're good at listening. They know how to do this. They have tools that make them more productive. They have, they even have things like physical foot pedals that are in their office, like a sewing foot pedal that they use to play the audio faster or slower. The point is they're a professional, and so they can do it 2 to 4 times faster than you can.
Thank you. And so
we think people should come to us and not do it themselves.
So I want to underline that you're using professionals and you acknowledge that they're professionals, which is very different than I think when people think of online workers or when they think of doing micro tasks. that, you know, to work online, they're going for the lowest common denominator. They're not looking for professionals, because if you want to get a task done cheaply, you want to get it, and you want to get it done fast, you don't want to pay professional rates.
That's right. So there's a lot of discussion about this whole global work market, and there's many different things that get said. There are things that people like and things that people complain about. Most of the positives come from the businesses, and the complaints come from the worker side of things. For example, in the programming market, there are people that are concerned about programming jobs going to folks in places like Russia and India that work for lower pay. So that's one set of concerns, and this is a real fact of globalization. There's a different set of issues, which you're alluding to, that I would characterize as the race to the bottom, where there's certain kinds of tasks that, because they're relatively unskilled, they can be done by a huge range of people, and it's very difficult for somebody to build and earn a stable income on those kinds of tasks. And so, you know, we don't focus on those kinds of things. I don't criticize what somebody else does for a living. There's many types of work that need to get done in the world. We're focused on categories that we believe are skilled work that are best done by professionals. You can almost think of them as artisans in the modern sense. These are people that have a trade and have a craft. And, you know, our translators take every bit as much pride in being a good translator as you do in product management or podcasting or media. For them, it matters. They want to be the best that they can be at that. And so if you leave them to their own devices, the translators will speak to other translators about nuances in the language, new software out there that can make them more effective, different approaches to getting the work done quickly. How would you translate this phrase? We see the same thing with transcriptionists. How would you handle some unusual situation? These kinds of discussions that they have, where they're trying to be the best that they can be, it's self-directed. They do it because they want to be better. But the end result is that our clients end up with better work because people take pride in the work.
Thank you. I really appreciate your respecting the worker, because it's one of the things that concerns me about our Silicon Valley bubble, is that the end user is a data point, not an individual, not a professional, not a respected human being. So I appreciate you having, you know, bringing integrity into and using technology to serve, to actually make a difference, not just to monetize. Clearly, that's important. But
so, you know, I'm going to add to that a little more. I'm going to poke a little fun at Amazon for a second, which is probably my favorite company, and I have the stock, and I use Amazon almost every day. But, you know, Amazon, for those that don't know, has a service called Mechanical Turk.
Yes.
And Mechanical Turk is, in many ways, the granddaddy of raw crowdsourcing. You know,
yes.
They kind of put the word crowd in crowdsourcing. You'll never hear me use the word crowdsourcing to describe Rev, because I've never been a worker that wanted to be part of a crowd. I've never been a customer that wanted their work done by a crowd. I don't think that so-called crowdsourcing is the best way for businesses to get work done or for workers to build a career. But Mechanical Turk does something very useful. So I'm going to describe, I'll give like a very short, like 1 minute history, as I understand it, of how Turk was created, what it does, why it's called what it's called, has a weird name.
I've researched it also, yes.
And, you know, long story short, Amazon years ago realized they needed somebody, a human being, to perform small tasks. For example, if a product review gets flagged as potentially being offensive, let's say if you write a review for a book you got there, and you what if you use dirty language or something? They need a human being that can go and determine whether a review is inappropriate. And they had so many needs for these kinds of quick judgments, I think is how they thought about them, that they built a system to do that. And so the system basically allows anybody to create small tasks. Typically, these tasks can be performed in less than a minute and probably pay a penny, a nickel, maybe a dime if you're lucky, not a lot of money. And they have a lot of them. And then they opened that up to the public. And so technically, it is a small part of Amazon Web Services, which, as product managers know, is the tool that many companies use to host their storage and to rent server capacity. So there are many Silicon Valley startups that sprung up saying, hey, I know how to write software. If I can tap into the labor pool on Amazon's Mechanical Turk, then I can get work done, not for free, but for some low pay. And many have done this. And it can work well for certain categories of work. A quick reminder, why is it called Mechanical Turk? You know, my understanding is that there's some, not proverb, but there's some story about a chess playing, you may have done this, a chess playing machine where somebody thought they were playing against a machine, but it was actually a person behind the wall or behind the
cloak.
They
were sitting inside the desk. So they would go into different towns, like a circus act, and they would get the best chess player to come play against this. It looked like it was a robot or an automaton sitting on top of the desk, but there was actually a chess master who was little enough to fit inside the desk, moving the chess pieces with pulleys or magnets.
Right. So it speaks to a scenario in which Amazon wanted to create human labor that was indistinguishable from software.
That was hidden.
That was hidden. And so, you know, it's almost like...
So it looked like artificial intelligence, but it really is human-driven.
Right. And so that's actually very appealing to a software engineer writing a program because you just want to get the work done. I think from what I've seen talking to folks, that approach does not lead to creating a great work environment for a person trying to make a living. And I think a friend of mine spoke to somebody who was involved in Turk early on from the Amazon side, and what I heard as the takeaway, and I'm paraphrasing kind of secondhand playing telephone, was the person from Amazon said, man, what I really wish I knew then was you need to treat people like humans.
Yeah.
And if they had, Turk probably would be a lot bigger than it is today.
Yeah. So I heard that it like you said, that it came about not on purpose, and it wasn't intended to be a service they were giving to other people. But it is used by data scientists. It's very good for getting people to respond to quick answers. And there's someone I follow, Panos, he was at MIT, and he writes about data, and he makes it accessible, and the guy is brilliant. So they're always doing experiments. There's been artwork created from some famous artwork. I think it was the sheep artwork where they paid people a nickel to draw a sheep, and then they displayed sheep from all over the world, and they turned it into a YouTube video. It's fascinating what people have done, but again, none of that is about enabling people to make a fair wage.
Yeah, and just to add, Turk is wonderful and amazing. I've met people that are MIT researchers who use it to do incredible research that they could not otherwise do, and it enables that. And so it's exciting development, but I think, as you said, Amazon has seen it as more of a science project than a core business. And so I think it's a wonderful tool for researchers and people doing interesting kind of experiments. But I don't think that it's the wave of the future.
I agree. And thank you. And it's wonderful if you're on the professional side, if you're on the user of the service side, if you're in the academia. But for the individuals who get drawn in, hey, you can make money sitting in front of your computer for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or a half hour with no skills. That's so unfair because there's still a ramp up. It's not an easy UI. It's gotten better. The interface is ugly. They've made, you know, they improve, but because it's not a core business, they've enabled an ecosystem around it to build on top of it and make it better. And the other thing I noticed that in Rev.com, I love Jeff Bezos because Amazon with the one tab, like he had vision and he's always been about the market and the customer, the end user, and not about the investors. So I noticed how what you're saying about Rev.com is now we're transcription and now we're translation, leaving open the tabs of where you're going. So that's awesome.
Yeah, no, that's right. You're reading into it correctly. The reality is, as a startup, you have to do one thing really, really well before you get a little too far out over your skis. But you know, we're very focused today on building, you know, the best services that we can, which is mostly a matter of mostly about making the workers more productive, making them more efficient. And the more we do to make our workers more productive, efficient, and happy, the better our service gets to our clients.
Excellent. So we've reached the half-hour mark. You're listening to the Global Product Management Talk. You're welcome to call in and join us. And I am told that the best experience if you're listening live is to listen over your phone. And that number is 323-927-2957. You can follow us on Twitter if you can get onto Twitter at PRODMGMTTALK. Shout out to our local listeners. In the studio with me today is Jason Ciccola, who's the founder and CEO of Rev.com. We're having a great conversation about respecting workers and developing labor marketplaces and the role of technology in freelance work and the future of freelance work. So this is Cindy F. Solomon, your host. And you can find our archives at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. And I've been coached to tell you to go over to PRODMGMTTALK.com and donate your appreciation for this podcast and for our archives. Thank you. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, so you know, I think there's one other really important element that I haven't mentioned, which is why am I focused on work from home? Why do we care about remote work? Why is it so important? And, you know, I've been talking about the how, but not the why. The why, in my opinion, is it's a number of things. Traffic stinks. Housing costs a lot of money in big cities, especially like where we are right now, Northern California. Some jobs can be a grind. You know, Dilbert shows that work can suck. So does movie Office Space. Many people want to take charge of their career, become their own boss, become mini entrepreneurs. And the internet makes it possible to be your own boss. If you have a skill and you can find enough customers, you can stay busy and do your thing on your own hours, on your own terms. Some people have family considerations and they want to be able to adjust their work schedule around the needs of their family. Or maybe they don't want to have to pay for daycare. Maybe they'd rather be home. And so there's a whole bunch of different personal factors that give a huge benefit to people that are able to work remotely. Actually, the last one I didn't mention is simply that you may not live in the city where the work is. You might live in a rural place. You might live in a foreign country. Maybe you were born in the Philippines, or maybe you're an expat living there. I got an email a few weeks ago from one of our transcriptionists who says that she is a – was it cow hand? It was some sort of female equivalent of cowboy. She spends her time like rustling cattle on a ranch in Montana. And for her, that is her passion, but she gets, I think, the bulk of her income from sites like ours. And so the reason why companies like mine are so excited about what we're doing is that, you know, we think that that just as the internet made it possible to do shopping from a computer, we think that the internet is going to make it possible for more and more people to do work from a computer. And if you ask yourself, why don't more people work from a computer today? There's a bunch of reasons. One reason is that the jobs aren't there, so people are just trying to create them. But another reason is that if you go from an office space, a work environment that's very social, to going to work at home on your own, it can be lonely. You might not have the water cooler. You might not have your friends at the office. So you go from kind of a high bandwidth real world environment where there's folks around you. You're listening to gossip. You're talking about the last night episode of Game of Thrones. And when all of a sudden you go work at home, you don't have that. And we think that the right path is to create that. You know, we're trying to look at what are the things about working in the office that are good, like friends, recognition, gossip, and BS, and trying to pull the best parts of those things to the online work environment and to make it a social and fulfilling place. And you know, that is not, you know, we're not going to be done in a year. That's a hard thing to do. You know, we're dealing with the real limitations of technology. We're talking about screens that are 12 to 20 inches in size. You know, it's not going to be the same as sitting in an office. Maybe if we had, you know, fully immersive screens with great audio and everything was like the sound studio, you could be remote and it'd be like some science fiction movie, and you wouldn't notice that the guy's like halfway around the world. But today there's a big gap. We think that the right path is to take the best elements of the workplace and bring them to online work, and I think that's going to take more than a decade to really be as good. But we want to make online work as good as working in an office, and the real differences aren't economic ones. They're more subtle social elements, like where do I have more fun?
Okay, so I have a workaround to get onto Twitter. So I'm getting some tweets out there, and which is how this came about as well. How do we create community? How can we open up a discussion for people all over the world to engage in finding out about how to forward their product management expertise, hear from thought leaders, and engage in conversation, which is why we use Twitter, because it's open, although the tools to access the Twitter conversation keep changing. So the podcast is helpful. Let's see. So I think you gave us a good background in how Rev is different than other labor marketplaces online. So why don't I ask you a product management specific question in terms of how important are your customers to informing the product roadmap? So we just took a huge leap into product management where we're concerned with the product roadmap and what your plans are. You've alluded to this other, you want to get it right in these first two services. So how do the customers change where your focus is or where your plans are on the roadmap?
So, you know, customers are everything. I read a quote once from a VC where he said, the first version of your product you do based on instinct, you know, and the second version is based on data. We're now at a point where we can do it based on data because we have enough folks that use the product. And so we're asking them every day and every week, how do you like it? What can we do better? And labor businesses, frankly, marketplace businesses have some unique product management challenges, which is that you have two very distinct groups, buyers and sellers. And so only one of them pays you, but they are both your customers in a very real sense, because if all the workers don't show up tomorrow, I'm going to be up the creek. And so we spend a lot of time interfacing with the workers, with our customers, and we do it through surveys, forums, phone calls. We have all kinds of places on the site where we ask people to get feedback, and enough do that we get a steady stream of input. And I think the feedback takes a couple different forms. There's kind of the high level stuff and the specific stuff. The high level stuff is you need to talk to enough customers to know what they really care about. So in our case, customers care about things that you could probably guess. They want it to be high quality. They want it to be fast. They want it to be convenient. That's not going to change. A year from now, they're going to want the same things. So we spend time focused on how to make the quality higher, how to make the turnaround faster, how to make it more convenient. You know, on the convenient side, for example, we launched, like you mentioned, an iPhone app that makes it easier to submit audio to us. They can record it and submit the audio through the app. We have a bunch of initiatives underway for quality and turnaround. Those initiatives are largely invisible to the customer. What we hope they notice is that the quality is higher and the turnaround is faster. We do most of those things on the worker side. Another aspect about a marketplace is... Go ahead.
It just occurred to me, though, that it's interesting that your workers are also your customers.
Very much.
They're not customers for the service, but they're customers that they're implementing your service. They're using your service. If they're users,
you're right. Here's the difference, right? A lot of companies think, I hire these employees, I put them in a building, I give them all a cubicle, and tell them what to do. That's the traditional way that a company manages a workforce. And that will not get you to first base in a freelance labor marketplace, because every day they wake up and they have a choice. Which site do they go to? Do they go to your site, somewhere else? Do they not work? Do they go get a job around the corner? in the so-called real world. And so we have to make sure that we make our work environment better than the alternative. If not, they won't show up. And even though we're the ones paying them, and we do have a certain power is the wrong word, but if somebody consistently submits low quality work and does it late, we're going to have to not continue to use that person in the same way that if you are an Uber taxi driver and you don't show up when you say you're going to, I guarantee you, you're not going to be working for Uber very long.
So we're talking about how you respond to feedback from your customers. But for those workers who are less than quality, are you giving them feedback so they could improve, so they could learn from working for you?
Absolutely, in a few ways. So every single worker has an account on our site where they can see metrics on their performance. So, and they can see where they stand versus the norms that we expect. And so if the typical worker always submits the work on time, and someone's missing the deadline half the time, that's staring them in the face. They know what they need to do. Similarly, when folks have the work proofread, they're receiving comments back on how to make it better. We've also built and implemented to different extents different kinds of training tools and other materials to help them understand not just the way we think things should be done for our system, but also the way we think the work should be done in general. These are details-oriented stuff, but we are doing our best to provide coaching and feedback to the workers so that they're not surprised. I'm not going to tell you we're perfect. We have a long way to go.
But you're helping them ramp up. You're helping them strategize so they can improve.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And
so they make more money.
It's in our best interest because we want everyone. You know, we want them to succeed, not to fail. If somebody starts working in our system, does a crappy job, and we have to not let them continue to work, it doesn't help me, right? We want them to be successful, and we have a ways to go. But today, we have a few things in place to help them get better, and we'll have more of that over time.
So, while we're on the subject, how does someone become a worker? Could you just walk through the process? They go to rev.com, and what do they do?
Sure. So they go to rev.com, and one thing you're going to note, and this is true for any labor site, is that most of the site and most of the marketing is focused on acquiring customers, right? On acquiring people that pay. So typically the worker has to look around a little bit to find, you know, where's this place for me to go? So if you go to the contact page on our site, there's a little link that says, click here to apply to become a transcriptionist or a translator. We're actually updating that section today. I'm not sure if the release has happened. It's going to happen either this morning or this afternoon. But effectively, that part of the site will tell them how our site works, how we pay, basic rules of the road, like we pay every Monday for work you do the prior week, here's what we expect, et cetera. If they're interested, we have them apply. So applying means submitting a resume, but also submitting a work sample where we ask them to do a very small task that is indicative of the kind of work that we expect them to do on a regular basis.
Oh, wow. So this is actually formal work. This is serious. This isn't just anyone who wants to come and, you know, transcribe.
Yeah, it's critical to maintain a high quality bar. You know, you mentioned earlier that you used the service and you had a good experience. I'm very glad that you did. That wasn't an accident, right? If we let anybody who wants just come and start working with no filter, you would not have had a good experience, right? And I think and that's critical. I don't think any organization, I don't know of any company worth its salt that lets anybody work with no restrictions, right? We have to have quality standards. It's critical that the person has good English skills, that they have good listening skills, that they have good writing skills, that they're responsible enough to commit to a deadline and then hit it.
And I it's not like CAPTCHA. You're not asking people to come and apply and then do a transcription that then you're selling.
No.
Amazon Turk, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
In order for people to get vetted, they're actually doing work that they're not getting paid for.
No, yeah. You know, we're not playing games. I mean, like I said before, you know, we don't even think that model of breaking things up into many little pieces is all that good, because you end up with this discontinuity of the one word getting written seven different ways. So there's a few more steps after what I just described. If we let someone in, we don't give them free rein to work forever with no checks and balances. Everybody has to maintain certain standards. And at a very high level, the standards are submit work on time to the deadlines that you commit to, and to submit work with high accuracy that's nicely formatted. And you know, we have grading in place so that people can see how they're doing. And you know, probably for the vast majority of the workers, there's no issue, but there's always some group at the bottom that struggles to meet those standards. And we focus on helping them to, and this may sound harsh, but to shape up or ship out, because we have to maintain a quality standard or else customers won't come back to us.
And it's still a good learning experience for them, because they're getting feedback. It's not that they're throwing something out there and not knowing what they're doing wrong.
That's right. Yeah, I know. And so, you know, going back to the product manager question, early on, many years ago, I actually had a bunch of conversations with a woman named Mary Lou Song, who was at eBay, and she ran their community in the early years. And she persuaded me that if you build a forum, a community forum, and you run it right, a forum can be the ultimate tool for product management. And today we have, you know, a very active forum, and we're always using it, and we listen. We're always asking people, what do you think? How can we make it better? What if we did it this way? What if we did it that way? And it's difficult. You know, it's hard to get it going, because it's like a flywheel. Initially, there's nobody in there. Initially, there's no post day one. And so I think the only way to build an effective product management organization is to get a high volume inflow of requests from your customers. But the only way to do that is to show you're not full of it by delivering on enough of the things they ask for that they believe that you have the capability to do stuff, so they'll take the time. If you always ask for ideas and you never implement any of them, they'll stop telling you ideas, because they'll think, what's the point of telling these guys something if they can't do it? So we're always trying to raise our credibility level by getting their request done faster and faster. And you know, our product guys spend a lot of their time always out there talking to users, trying to get more and more, but also it's a little bit like the politician saying, you know, you wanted a bridge in your district. Look what I did. I brought you the bridge. Now, what else do you need?
Wow. I mean, that's the key number one thing for product managers: be listening to the market, be listening to the users, be, you know, get outside the building.
But it's more than that. But the company has to help them build credibility.
Has to follow through.
Because,
that's right.
You know, what I found is when I put people to talk to the users that weren't in a product manager capacity, it didn't work as well. Because what I realized is that the worker would say, hey, do you think you could do this? And the person would say, well, I'm not sure if that's possible technically. And the worker would say, well, why am I talking to you? Right? Or they'd say, yeah, I think we can try that, but they didn't have authority to get it done.
Right.
Right? And so we like having the product managers talk to users as directly as possible without a filter, without a middleman, because that way the customers feel like, I'm talking to the person that has the power to make it happen. Everyone wants to speak to the boss. Well, at my company, for each part of the business, there's a different boss, right? And that's the product guy.
But still, doesn't the product guy have to push back if what they're asking for is outrageous?
Of course, absolutely. And
'cause that's where the challenge is. But what if 50 people are all asking for that same outrageous feature that's, you know, 3 months out? It's not next week.
You know, if the way I look at it is that a company has to protect its business model. If you ask your customers, what do you want? What do you think of our pricing? They'll say, lower it. Okay. So you know what? You don't ask that question. You ask, how can we make the experience better for you? They'll tell you. If 50 people ask us for a feature and it's a matter of writing software, we'll get it done. Maybe not right away, but down the line.
So you're focusing on the value. The value to the end user, aligned with the value to the company.
How can we grow that value?
Yeah.
You know, if you like us a little, how can we help you to like us a lot? And no, the product manager has to do all the trade-offs. The product manager, you know, they understand and they get that if 20 people each ask you for 20 different things, that's not very useful. You know, you want to find the thing that 20 people want. And it's their job to navigate that and to push back and to understand, well, why do you want that? Like, what's the why behind the why that gets you to the core pain that then we say, hey, well, what if we did this? Would that solve the problem? And that's, I mean, what we look for in a product manager, somebody that doesn't take the request as given. They don't take the request from the worker, the customer, and say, oh, just build that. They really dig in and dig in and dig in until they understand the underlying pain, and we try to find a solution that'll benefit as many people as possible.
So it's very exciting. So I'm talking with Jason Shikola, and this is a CEO and founder who understands product management, who has it embedded, I would say, product management best practices. Someone to watch, a company to watch and join and see how they're doing it. Sign up to be a worker. Follow @Rev on Twitter because very exciting. You really are disrupting the space, and you're doing it all the right way. You're putting the attention on the workers because we're going into a huge disruption. If we're not already there in economics and in professional workers having access, I mean, just in college kids being able to get jobs, and here's an opportunity for them because your workers need to be educated in order to do a good job, and there's an opportunity. Everyone types fast these days.
So, you know, I think, first, thanks for the kind words, and I think you're right that there are so many, I'll use maybe an MBA term, but labor pools that are untapped or that are underutilized. And college kids is a great example. I can remember being in college and basically working for minimum wage. And then in the summer, I could go and I'd work and I'd make double minimum wage or eventually triple minimum wage, right, back in the day. And it's unfortunate because it was the same me, but in the summer I could make, you know, 14 bucks an hour or 15 bucks an hour, and in the school year I'd make seven just because I was there and I wasn't where the job was. And so I think that there are going to be many more ways over time that startups help people to make a few bucks and eventually a lot of bucks. And I think if you broaden your definition of ways to make money, you see with Uber and Sidecar and Lyft and even Airbnb, some of the new and most exciting businesses are helping people to make money in their free time. And that, you know, these marketplaces are all specialized, but what they have in common is that folks want to use the internet to find new ways to make money. And I think that's not going to go away.
And I think you also have a lot to teach startups about how to do product management. So I am publicly inviting you to do a webinar and speak in person at Startup Product Talks Meetup and other opportunities, because we talk about product management in theory. We talk about people who are doing product management. It's very rare that we see it in an organization, in a young organization of less than 20 people actually implementing best practices.
Well, thank you. I accept and happy to join and participate. You know, we're hiring, and so I'd love to get our name out there, and so that way I'd love to meet, you know, interesting folks that might be looking for the next gig, and I'd love to be a part of it.
Okay, so if people are looking for product positions, who should they contact?
They can email me at jason@rev.com. That's a real simple way to do it, and I think we have something on our website too.
Great. So go to rev.com and look for joining the organization as well as being an online worker. I've been talking with Jason Shikola, who is the CEO and founder of rev.com. Very excited about this is a company to watch. And definitely Jason is someone who is a star in this space and disrupting the online workplace. Very exciting what he has to say. We've just tapped the tip of the the contribution he has to make to product managers and to startups. So I'm delighted to have him join us. Follow them on Twitter at Rev and go to the website rev.com. This is Cindy F. Solomon with the Global Product Management Talk. There will be no live broadcast next week because in the United States it is a holiday and we'll give our engineer a day off. And myself. And coming up the following week, June 3rd, is Kyle Henderson, who's the CEO of UI, which we've mentioned today, and that's Y-O-U-E-Y-E. UI also stands for user interaction. He spoke recently at the Startup Product Talks meetup, and he'll be talking about his product and how they actually can see people's emotions when they're looking at websites. We also have Terry Jones, who is the founder and former CEO of Travelo City and now the chairman of Kayak.com, coming up on June 10th. And on June 17th is Ed Brill, director of social business and collaboration solutions at IBM. So just follow us at blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk, and you'll get reminders of who's coming up, and you can listen to our archives. Also, last week we participated in the Pipeline Conference. That's at pipelineconference.com. That was an online conference of innovation. You can still register for that and get access for 90 days to the resources. They live stream, but also they recorded all of the speakers worldwide talking about innovation and product management. That was sponsored by PlanView, which is product management software. And if you go to meetup.com/startup product talks, you'll see a listing of events in the past and coming up. Silicon Valley Code Camp isn't until October, but you can register now at go to Silicon Valley Code Camp. I'll be presenting a presentation on deconstructing the code for product excellence, which is really what the underlining theme of the Global Product Management Talk is. How do we arrive at product excellence, and how do we bring everyone in the organization with us, and how do we even define product excellence? So I'm delighted that Jason gave us insight into how Rev.com is defining product excellence. And thank you to BZ Lewis in Studio 132. Thank you to our sponsors at AIPMM, Sprint.ly, Brainmates.com, Sponsumo.com, and Blame Sally. This is Cindy F. Solomon. Have a great 2 weeks. And see you back here, or hope you're listening online at blogtalkradio.com, PRODMGMTTALK. You can reach me, Cindy, at PRODMGMTTALK.com. Have a great week, and thank you, Jason.